You're listening to In the Loop, a unique opportunity to see life from a different perspective with New York Times bestselling author, Andy Andrews. Now here's your host, David Loy.
Hi, and welcome to a very special episode of In the Loop with Andy Andrews. I'm your host, David Loy. Andy, thanks for joining us today.
I am glad to be here. As always, I love doing these with you.
And we're in Nashville, across the table from each other, as sometimes we get to do. We enjoy that. But why is today's episode special?
I don't know. Actually, I do know. This is an undercover edition.
Absolutely. It's for a very special group of people. It's going specifically to pastors. An audience of all church leaders is going to be listening to this. And so this is just for you. Now, obviously, you know you can go listen to In the Loop on iTunes and on Stitcher and on andyandrews.com. But this episode is specifically for the pastors and church leaders around the country.
And there's a reason for that beyond the fact that we just like pastors and ministers, and my dad was one, and there's a reason for behind that. And you're going to reveal that in a little bit. This is going to be great. I'm so excited about this.
Yes, and what we're talking about today is specifically one of your novels, a New York Times bestselling novel called The Noticer, and how that novel relates to faith in general, how it relates to the church, and why people that are in positions of leadership in the church should be aware of this book. Now, Andy, you've talked a little bit previously about your faith, how that plays into how you write. Give us a snapshot, though, as to what your mental process is when you write your novels.
Well, you know, it took me a while to figure out exactly what I was supposed to do. You know, I mean, my dad was a minister. I grew up in the church. I accepted Christ as my Savior as a young man. But my big aggravation with God has always been that He doesn't seem to be under any obligation to tell me what He's doing. And so for a long time, I'm like, God, what exactly are you wanting me to do? You know, I'm writing these books, I'm speaking, and I'm traveling. And it took a while to figure out that what I'm supposed to do is to write books that Christians can give to their non-Christian friends that they will actually read and bring about conversations between Christians and non-Christians. Because we all, as much as I love Dr. Graham and a lot of our great Christian leaders, David, you and I both know, we all have friends that if we give them a C.S. Lewis book, or if we give them a Billy Graham book, they're just not going to read it.
Right.
Okay, they're just not going to read it. We live in an odd time in which, you know, when I was growing up, you could have the volleyball game on the beach and the youth group break up afterwards and put your arm around somebody and say, you know, do you have a relationship with Jesus Christ? And you could have a conversation with them about that. I think people are a little bit misinformed or confused about why that doesn't work as well as it used to. I think people believe that it doesn't work because there are some kind of tolerance laws or some kind of, you know, people going against the church and state type of thing. That's not really why that doesn't work.
So why doesn't it work anymore?
The real reason it doesn't work anymore is because we live in a time where there is so much information. And what that means is that because of so much information from the internet, from television, from radio, from people, many people feel as though they have already made up their mind. You know, when I was growing up, now I'm 56 years old, to give you just kind of an area there. But when I was growing up, there was only three television channels that anybody could watch. There was only, and a lot of the country only was able to watch two of them. And those television channels did not go for 24 hours. You know, radio was very local. Okay, and newspaper coverage was very local. And now, there is so much news. There's 24 hours of everything and hundreds of channels and the internet. And so what I'm saying is people, whether they are better informed or not about anything, they certainly believe they are.
Right.
And so, you know, when I was growing up, you could go to somebody and say, hey, have you heard about or have you thought about this? And chances were that they had not. And so there was a conversation to be had. And of course, it was a more civil time. Now, people believe they have already made up their mind. And so I believe that we can be, you know, the mission has not changed. Or should I say, the commission has not changed.
That's right.
The Great Commission has not changed. But I do believe that we have to be maybe imaginative or a little more imaginative about how we have the opportunity to explain it.
And what you've done so successfully for years now is taken what you're great at, which is storytelling, and use that as the way to explain or at least start conversations.
Right. You know, the statistics show us that better than 98% of the people that make a commitment to Christ, that come to a decision about Christ, 98% of them, more than 98%, it happens with someone else involved. There is a conversation involved,
mm-hmm.
that somebody invited them to something, somebody asked them to read something, somebody had a conversation with them. And so, you know, I have had people say, you know, this book here, it doesn't mention Jesus at all. Why would Thomas Nelson publish this book? It doesn't say Jesus at all.
Right.
And the answer is because I know that if I did have that in there, many people would put the book down as soon as they read it, and I would be kind of preaching to the choir. Right? Only
right.
The Christians would be reading it.
Mm-hmm.
And that does very little to further the Great Commission. And so I also know that by engaging people in a story and engaging people in something like the Christians totally get it. They understand it.
Yes.
They read it and they totally understand it. And then they can say to a non-Christian friend, they can say, hey, read this. You know, take it. Man, this book is just awesome. I saw this on Good Morning America. Because see, here's a curious thing too. This the book we're talking about today, I think. Well, all my books are kind of like this.
Yes.
But the one specifically today we were going to talk about is The Noticer.
Correct. Yes.
And this is a story of when I was a young man. My parents had died, and this is a story. I'm living under a pier, and this old man found me and started talking to me and changing my thinking and shifting me and influencing me. Well, the whole idea that is amazing to me how God has used this book is, as you know, David, this book is being taught. Curriculum's being taught on this book in public schools.
Correct. And universities as well.
And universities. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are 2,500 plus school systems using our books, you know, from K-5 all the way up, different books, obviously from K-5
right.
all the way up to university programs. But the thing is, it's being taught in public schools. Now, it was Good Morning America's. I mean, they brought me on the show. They talked about this book. It was a big choice of theirs. And I've had people ask me sometimes, man, what are the odds that a show like that would pick a Christian book as their book of the month, as their book to highlight? Well, what they don't seem to understand is, to those people, it's not a Christian book.
Right.
You and I know that these principles are straight out of the Bible.
Yes.
Okay, and so the thing is that it's having an impact there. Now, the Christians will read it. I mean, we've been amazed at how many pastors have used this in conjunction with their congregations to totally increase people coming to the church, to totally increase decisions for Christ, because what they'll do is they'll get a whole bunch of these things and tell these people, get what you can afford to get one of them, get three of them, and get them to friends. Yeah. And just say, hey, I saw this on television, or I heard about this on the radio. Man, I'm reading this. This book is blowing me away. It's about this old guy that wanders into town, and nobody knows where he's from, and nobody knows, like, where he stays when he's there, and he seems to be there when things are happening. And so getting people to read it. And then at some point, the pastor tells the congregation, and they all know what's going to happen. Say, okay, next Sunday, I'm going to be speaking about the noticer. That's going to be the basis of the topic. And then what the people go and say to as they're talking to their friend about this book, and they don't say, hey, our preacher is going to be preaching about this, or in church we're going to hear a sermon on this. What they say is, they say, are you liking the book? Man, I am really getting into this book. This old guy, I mean, what do you think he is? Because that seems to be the big question.
There's a lot of mystery that surrounds it.
Is this real?
Exactly.
Did this really happen? And so then what they say is, hey, if you're liking this book, man, as much as I am, come, because over at the church, Sunday morning, our guy is talking about this.
Specifically about this.
Not our pastor, our guy.
And he's not preaching.
Yeah,
exactly.
And
we've heard from so many people around the country that are planning to do that in kind of like a summer reading program of thing.
Right,
where it's a community outreach. It's something that gets friends and neighbors engaged and involved and starts a discussion. And what's the thing you always say about fishing? And it has to it relates to witnessing and how you share.
Well, it's amazing to me. And I hope the pastor who I was sitting in front of on this flight recently is not listening to this, okay?
What are the odds?
Well, I hope not good, okay?
Right.
But I was on a flight recently, and I already told you about this, but the guy was sitting behind me, and I didn't know who he was, okay? But I heard he and this other guy talking. And so the pastor, who I found out in a little while was a pastor, he asked the other guy, what do you do for a living? The guy said, you know, I'm an executive with a national insurance company and da-da-da-da. And he said, no, what do you do? He's just being polite. And he said, well, I'm a pastor and a pastor of a church and so and so and so and so. And he said, where do you go to church? And the guy said, well, I don't go to church. And he said, oh, really? You know, and the conversation evolved into this, where the guy told the pastor, he said, look, I don't mean to be rude or anything, but I just, I don't believe in this. I don't believe in God. And the pastor said, you don't. And he said, no, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in any of this. I don't believe. And I'm listening, right? I'm listening. And when he said, I don't believe in God, the pastor said, you know, in Revelation, in the Bible, God's word, in Revelation, it says, those who do not believe. And he goes on, and I wanted to jump around and go, wait, dude, did you hear him? He just said he doesn't believe this.
Right.
Okay, and so now you're going to use the Bible to try to prove something to him when he just said he doesn't believe the Bible. And so my point is, we have to be smarter than that, because all that pastor did was to further cement this guy's thought process that Christians are kind of nuts, that we are, you know, maybe a little delusional, or we just don't get it, okay? And so there has to be a connection. See, to fulfill our part of the Great Commission, to do what we're supposed to do, it really requires leadership, right? I mean, this is
right.
Leadership. Okay, well, the essence of leadership is influence. And the essence of influence is agreement, not disagreement. You will never lead somebody effectively that you're just having a disagreement with. Okay? And so you have to find some common ground before you can ever have influence. Now, I'm not exactly sure what that pastor should have said, but I will tell you this. The pastor probably should have recognized that there wasn't going to be anything that he was going to do right at that point except leave this guy with an impression that this pastor was a good guy. that he was a normal guy, and that, gosh, he liked the Dallas Cowboys too, or whatever, right? So that the next time somebody had opportunity to run him, he didn't already have a bad taste in his mouth about who these people were and their brain power and all right. of that. And so we want to lead. And so the idea and the thing, and I know that I've gone around the world to answer your question, but Jesus wanted us to be fishers of men. And every great fisherman knows that if you're going to catch a fish, you can't beat him over the head with the lure. Right? I mean, if you beat that fish over the head with a lure, he's just going to run from you or get angry or what. But you're not going to catch him. You're not going to get him to take the bait and get in the boat with you. And so every good fisherman knows you got to put it out there and make it look good and make it and see, we should be able to make it look good because it's not just good. It's great. In fact, it's the best news the world has ever known.
Exactly.
I mean, we got to work to mess this one up.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's our whole message here is I think that there are multiple avenues, multiple opportunities to share this amazing content that's in the Noticer with your church. I mean, we all know that there are many visitors and many people that are seeking the truth there on a regular basis, maybe in your congregation or just in your community. And this is an excellent resource that's available to you in multiple formats. That could be an outstanding resource. So, Andy, is there anything else about why the Noticer message, the message that's in the book, which I should say, the first chapter is, that's completely your story. That's your life.
Yeah, yeah. You know, people ask me all the time, they say, is this true? Is the book true? And the first chapter of it is absolutely true. I mean, that really happened just like that. Now, the rest of it is more my imagination, using, you know, conversations I heard with him or things right. I heard him say and things he taught me. But it is an amazing story, and he really was like that. And so I think something that would be curious to people is I wasn't really expecting this, but I started reading reviews about the book, which I probably shouldn't do that. But I'm reading what people are saying, and people are saying, well, the author obviously intended this character Jones to be this or that or whatever. Well, people ask me all the time. They say, you know, so who was he really? Who was he? Who was he really? And I've learned to say to people, well, who do you think? Who do you think he was? Mm. And they'll say, and I'll say, well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. But it also prompted me because I knew him. I mean, because people say, well, you know, he represents Jesus, or well, he's an angel, or whatever. You know, in my own life, I had to remember, you know, this was a real guy,
right?
And so, who do I really? Or he was a real guy to me, right?
Yeah.
And so I think, well, who do I really think he was? And I had to think about that, and so the people, you know, listening to this, the pastors and the leaders of the church might be interested to know who I think he was. And my answer that I tell my boys and that my wife and I talk about occasionally is I believe Jones was an example of how God will use an ordinary person to change the lives of other people.
Mm.
And how God will move somebody and imbue them with wisdom and with great influence. And this is what this old man did, because his questions to me, his explanations to me, they changed my life. I mean, at that point, when my parents having died, I was angry, right?
And
people say, well, about what? And I say, well, about everything. And he really, and I remember saying to him one time, because I grew up in the church, and I said to him, I said, well, you know, I remember everybody saying that God will put a man after his own heart, you know, where he wants him to be. And so, you know, I'm like, thanks. You put me under a pier.
Right.
And he kind of laughed at that. And so it made me mad that he laughed. And I said, I'm not even sure I believe in God anymore. And he kind of chuckled and he said, well, that's all right. That's all right for now because he still believes in you.
Wow.
And he really started me on a road back. And I really, my hope, my prayer is that the pastors will be able to find ways to use this book. You know, the Heart Mender is another book that it's an unbelievable story about World War II and about the German submarines in the Gulf of Mexico. This really happened, sinking American ships in World War II, and yet the theme that runs through the whole book is forgiveness.
Mm. Which is crucial for so many people that are out there searching and seeking.
Right.
And asking questions. Well, Andy, thanks for your time today. Everyone who's listening to this, our special audience of pastors, I want to just remind you of a couple of things. The Noticer is in 30 languages around the world with millions of copies having been sold. This message has impacted people all over the globe, and we believe that the formats that HarperCollins, Thomas Nelson is providing for you as either summer church reading or a small group study, however you choose to use it, can make a powerful impact in your church and in your community as well. Andy, thanks for the time today. We will catch up with you on a future episode of In the Loop.
Thank you, buddy.
Join in the conversation with Andy on Facebook and Twitter. Also, be sure to check out andyandrews.com for more information.